Thank you so much, Leela. And I must say that you're not the only one that's confused me with Barbara Hester. And it's wonderful to be thought of in the same breath and in the same mind. So, as we settle in to our day of celebrating our Urantia family, our brothers and sisters, which comes from first our recognition of the love of God, and many of us call God our Father, and we work and respect those who have come to know the great source and center and of all things by other names for one reason or another. And I will be using the term primarily God the Father when I refer to the Trinity. I would say that because we have a plan for your study, that I discovered this day where we focus on our brothers and sisters and our love for each other because the Father loves us, really brings us to the eternal Son and the infinite Spirit. And as I prepared for this morning's session, I realized that while I have studied very faithfully papers 1 through 5, I am a little light on papers 6 through 10. I don't know if there are any others of you who may have not perhaps given them as much attention as those wonderful papers on God the Father, but this very much parallels Charles's approach to the understanding of God the Father, in that we're going to explore this morning the unfolding deity which reaches out to us here in this room right now. Paradise is alive and thriving this morning, and so are we. And we're connected to paradise. And this unfolding deity, the unfolding of the universal Father into the worlds of time and space, is what we celebrate today. And the good news of our Michael Son, our Master, who lived here on this planet, is that we are literally daily the sons of God, directly connected to the universal Father, to the eternal Son, and to the infinite Spirit. So that will be our focus for the day. And it's my pleasure to begin a consideration of unfolding deity. This would be, if you're following along or you want to follow along later in your own reading, starting with paper 6, which is the eternal Son. And as we can look at this study of the Paradise Trinity this morning, I have a question for you. Now, this is also a study question. I can't help it. I'm a teacher, and many of our faculty here teach. So I think in terms of study questions. The study question that has guided me is, why family? Now, that may not seem like an obvious question. For yesterday's program, I kept looking for God consciousness. Everywhere I went, I had on what I call my God goggles, and I'm thinking, where do I see God? Where do I see evidence among my brothers and sisters on Urantia of God's presence? What do you see when you look among our brothers and sisters on the planet? Do you see a lot of evidence of God consciousness? Yes? No? Yes. We do. Particularly if we're looking for it, and particularly if we're aware, and particularly if we're living in the presence of God, which many of us were practicing and working with yesterday. So it occurred to me that when we're looking for progress, I like to look for progress on our planet, don't you? To sort of think, well, maybe we're... Maybe things are getting better. Maybe there's some good news on the nightly news, that sort of thing. I started to realize that one of the things we take for granted is family. Not in the sense that we don't think it's important, but that's the whole point. It is important to everyone, and I do think that's true. I think that even some of the most tortured souls who perhaps are engaging in evil acts and sin on our planet, for some strange reason, have come to value family. And the family really has become and is the the basic unit of society. Now, the Urantia book teaches that, and not everyone who teaches sociology might see it that way. But the reality is that no matter how troubled and dysfunctional family life may be, or tribal life, or nation life, people value family on our planet. And that is a step of progress. That's evidence of our progression in God consciousness. But that still left me asking, why family? Why is it that family is the center of civilization, the building block of civilization? Why not the tribe? Why not nation life? Why is it the family? And you don't have to answer, but later today, I'd love to hear your answers to this question, too, as you think about it. Do you have any answers formulating in your mind? Why family? Why is family so important?
Relationship comes first, even with God.
Thank you, Jean-Pierre. Relationship comes first, even with God. And I knew someone would know that answer if I asked. I thought, that's an easy audience question, because you've been really studying the Urantia Revelation. And I'll hear other answers as we have time, but that's essentially it. So I'm going to share with you now some of what our Divine Counselor tells us about our Paradise family. Relationship comes first, even with God. And the Eternal Son is the perfect and final expression of the first personal and absolute concept of the Universal Father. Accordingly, whenever and however the Father personally and absolutely expresses himself, he does so through his Eternal Son, whoever has been, now is, and ever will be, the living and the divine Word. And this Eternal Son is residential at the center of all things, in association with and immediately enshrouding the personal presence of the Eternal and Universal Father. When we speak of God's first thought and allude to an impossible time origin of the Eternal Son for the purpose of gaining access to the thought channels of the human intellect, such distortions of language represent our best efforts at contact compromise with the time-bound minds of mortal creatures. In the sequential sense, the Father, Universal Father, never could have had a first thought, nor could the Eternal Son ever have had a beginning. But I was instructed to portray the realities of eternity to the time-limited minds of mortals by such symbols of thought, and to designate the relationships of eternity by such time concepts of sequentiality. So, the Divine Counselor is telling us a story about our Paradise family, our Paradise relationships. And as that story continues, we learn that we've been mistaken about the second person of deity. Many on our planet recognize the second person of deity as our Master Son Michael, who lived here as Jesus. And he is our representation of the Eternal Son to our planet in two ways. Because of our planetary prince's default, Michael is also our planetary prince. And we are, as we all know here, very fortunate in that endowment. The Eternal Son, whom our Michael Son represents to us in both being our Creator Son of Nebadon and also our Planetary Prince, is representing an Eternal Son known by different names in various universes. In the central universe, the Eternal Son is known as the coordinate source, the co-creator, the associate absolute. On Uversa, the headquarters of the super universe, we designate the Son as the coordinate spirit center and as the eternal spirit administrator. On Salvington, the headquarters of your local universe, this Son is of record as the second eternal source and center. The Melchizedeks speak of him as the Son of Sons. On your world, but not in your system of inhabited spheres, this original Son has been confused with a coordinate creator Son, Michael of Nebadon, who bestowed himself upon the mortal races of Urantia. Although any of the paradise sons may be fittingly called sons of God, we are in the habit of reserving the designation the eternal son for this original son, the second source and center, co-creator with the universal father of the central universe of power and perfection, and co-creator of all other divine sons who spring from within the infinite deities. Because of the eternal son's infinite mercy, he is often described as the mother son of our universe, the co-creator. And we then come to the necessary consideration of the infinite spirit. And I love the way the divine counselor describes this. They use the phrase, back in eternity. Doesn't that sound like a great place to go? You know, they're really working with us on this one. So we get to, you know, to paper 8. We've considered the eternal son. We understand that, and that he primarily manifests mercy. The mercy of the son, the mercy of our master son Michael is with us. The father is loving, the son is all merciful. The father is all loving. That's the phrase that the divine counselor uses, and the son is all merciful. So now we have, back in eternity, when the universal father's first infinite and absolute thought finds in the eternal son such a perfect and adequate word for its divine expression, there ensues the supreme desire of both the thought God and the word God for a universal and infinite agent of mutual expression and combined action. So our God of action, and it comes right down to us through the ministering spirits, is the infinite spirit. Another phrase that just seems wonderful is, in the dawn of eternity, quoting again the divine counselor, both the Father and the Son become infinitely cognizant of their mutual interdependence. Now there's a relationship term, this interdependence of families, of friends, of our relationship to everyone on the planet, whom we all know are brothers and sisters, and if we haven't met them yet, they're still brothers and sisters. We just haven't met them. So in the dawn of eternity, this wonderful relationship started, and this never-ending compact is made for the execution of their united concepts throughout all the circle of eternity. And ever since this eternity event, the Father and the Son continue in this divine action to which we are in reality connected at this very moment, and in every moment that we live, and in every moment that we transcend to the next plane of existence. We are all connected in that circle of eternity. We are now face to face with the eternal origin of the infinite spirit, the third person of deity. The very instant that God the Father and God the Son conjointly conceive an identical and infinite action, the execution of an absolute thought plan, that very moment the infinite spirit springs full-fledgedly into existence. And what does this child of the Father and the Son do back in eternity? The first act of the infinite spirit is the inspection and recognition of his divine parents. Does this sound familiar? I don't remember that moment, but we certainly remember the moment when a baby is born. The first act of the infinite spirit is the inspection and recognition of his divine parents, the Father, Father, and the Mother, Son. He, the Spirit, unqualifiedly identifies both of them. He is fully cognizant of their separate personalities and infinite attributes, as well as of their combined nature and united function. Next, voluntarily, with transcendent willingness and inspiring spontaneity, the third person of deity, notwithstanding his equality with the first and second persons, pledges eternal loyalty to God the Father and acknowledges everlasting dependence upon God the Son. Isn't that a beautiful story? Can't help it. Will Barbara ever give a speech without crying? Probably not. So, to me, that has become, in preparing for today, somewhat of a nighttime story. I never tire of reading at the end of the day this wonderful story of the Paradise Trinity. Now, in a short talk, I could only give you a glimpse of what it's like to live in the conscious presence of the Paradise Trinity. Yesterday we talked about living in the consciousness of our loving Father. So I decided I would tell you a story, and as I do, I invite you today to remember some of your favorite stories about family. And by the way, today is full of family events. We have all kinds of family-related programs, including, you may wonder how John Coughlin's presentation, for example, on the universe fits into today's session on our brothers and sisters. Well, it's our family home. You know, Paradise has a home, Havona. We have a home, Urantia. And we are now connecting in a more expanded way in understanding our universe home. So we have our universe home. We have some presentations on education. And one of the things that I found so central to today's themes is forgiveness. And I've laughed about how often we ask and give and receive forgiveness here when you're working on a program like this. It's just amazing how many mistakes you make and how gracious people can be about all the things that are going on. But it makes it work. And the family that lives in that sense of the mercy of the Son and the grace and the wisdom of the Infinite Spirit ministers to us, and the spirits of the Spirit minister to us all the time. So I wanted to read just one little bit from Jesus, who is our Master Son. The Divine Counselor tells us that if we really want to understand the mercy of the Eternal Son, that we should, and this is the very end of the paper, Eternal Son and the Universe, says, this is what a Divine Counselor tells us. More of the character and merciful nature of the Eternal Son of Mercy you should comprehend as you meditate on the revelation of these divine attributes, which was made in loving service by your own Creator Son, one time Son of Man on earth, now the exalted sovereign of your local universe, the Son of Man and the Son of God. So I contemplated Jesus' teachings, and there are so many, on forgiveness. In one of his discourses, he said, by opening the human end of the channel of the God-man communication, mortals make immediately available the ever-flowing stream of divine ministry to the creatures of the worlds. When man hears God's Spirit speak within the human heart, inherent in such an experience is the fact that God simultaneously hears that man's prayer. Even the forgiveness of sin operates in this same unerring fashion. The Father in heaven has forgiven you even before you have thought to ask him. But such forgiveness is not available in your personal religious experience until such time as you forgive your fellow men. Think about that. God unfailingly forgives us, but it is an act of God. For every action, there is an act of forgiveness by the Paradise Father. And for every act of forgiveness, there is potential for us the choice of receiving that forgiveness, of accepting forgiveness. And until both the act of forgiveness has been made and the acceptance has been made, both actions, forgiveness is not a full reality. The full reality of the Son's mercy, the Eternal Son, the unfolding love of the Father, and our Michael Son, Jesus, is not available to the fullness of the Supreme without our action. And in family living, it's a great place to start. Have you discovered that, I'm sure, many times over in your most intimate relationships, your most trusted friendships with the people that are most dear to you? I lost my place. Available to you as you forgive your fellow men. God's forgiveness is, in fact, not conditioned upon your forgiving your fellows, but in experience, it is exactly so conditioned. And this fact of the synchrony of divine and human forgiveness was thus recognized and linked together in the prayer which Jesus taught his apostles. So we have this wonderful model of family living. And I decided the best way to bring it home on the planet was to tell a story. We have to travel quickly through the center of the book, through the rebellion. And by the way, I studied the super universe government and concluded that in the 200,000 years of our rebellion experience and isolation, essentially we've been separated from our Father and our Eternal Son and our Mother Spirit. And some of you who study these things as well have shared with me how hard that is to forgive. But yet we forgive our planetary brothers and sisters, the celestial personalities who have taken those actions that conditioned our world to put us in the cosmic condition we're in. We're also told there are some rewards for that. And of course, one of those rewards, you well know, and I've heard you all talking about it, if you were to talk about Urantia today or any other of the worlds that are in rebellion, how familiar is this? Long before reaching Havona, who can quote it? Can anybody quote it? These faith-tested and much-traveled pilgrims of space, that's who we are, long before reaching Havona, these ascendant children of time have learned to what? Feast upon uncertainty, to fatten, especially that, upon disappointment, enthuse over apparent defeat, to invigorate in the presence of difficulties, to exhibit the indomitable courage in the face of immensity, and to exercise inconquerable faith when confronted with the challenge of the inexplicable. Long since the battle cry of these pilgrims became, in liaison with God, nothing, absolutely nothing, is impossible. Yes. Now, I could end my speech there, but there's just a little bit more to go. I hope you understand the spirit of all of that. There were a few things I wanted to share about our own family, and right now I kept mixing up my papers. The story I'm about to tell is one that came to me while I was contemplating all these various relationships. And it had to do, I was thinking, trying to think of a time when I had to ask for forgiveness. And there were many, of course. But one stuck in my mind particularly well. And I decided I might write it as something called The Story of the Two Sisters. And there's a reason for that. We have a wonderful session went on yesterday and today on race and the consciousness of God. And it's just such a privilege to be among students who can appreciate the value of those teachings. But one of the traditions in the traditions of the red man in many areas is the tradition of ancestors. And of course we're remembering our ancestors today, Berkeley Chalice, Berkeley Elliott, and anyone else that you want to remember today and honor in the tradition of the ancestors, the grandfathers of all of us. And I'm personally grateful that our fellowship in the study of the Revelation has progressed to the point that we have such multi-generational memories and ancestors to share and talk about. So I decided to tell a story about these two sisters. And they were fighting over a book. And I decided, well, I could write it as an Indian story, the story of the two sisters. Or I could tell you that it was me and my sister, which seems more personal. And she was 17, I was 15. And it was a pretty normal night in our family. This shows you how long ago it was. Dad was listening to the records that he enjoys, his music, and Mother had finished the dishes and was actually doing stitchery and needlework. But my sister and I were engaged in favorite activities. We were supposed to be doing our homework, and she was downstairs painting. She was an artist and enjoyed watercolor. In fact, she interrupted me to show me one of her watercolors. Well, it was a great evening, and it was getting late, and she was still reading a book that I had to read for an assignment the next day in school. And as the night wore on, I was getting pretty irritated. I enjoyed our evening, and I liked looking at her paintings, but why in the world wouldn't she finish with the book? So I went into her room and asked for the book, and she says, well, I'm not done yet. And it was getting late, and I wasn't very nice. I said, well, you should have been. You promised me I could read this book after you. Does this sound familiar? Yeah, what did you and your siblings fight over? So it didn't go too well. It wasn't the worst fight we'd ever had, but she finally just said, oh, here, take the book. You know, you take the book. It's so important to you. You take the book. So I took the book and huffed back into my room and started reading. Now, the book was Pride and Prejudice. True story, I'm not making this up. Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen. And as I read the book, the irony was not lost on me. At 17, I at least had some sense of reality. And I thought, well, I really should apologize. But then all sorts of thoughts went through my mind. Well, maybe it would be better not to say anything. After all, I might just make matters worse if I try to talk to my sister about this. And it's already late, we're both tired. I went through all the excuses. Well, that just didn't seem right to me. So I got up finally. I had finished my assignment. And I decided maybe what I could do is offer to help her. Maybe that would help the apology go more smoothly. So I went in and first asked if I could come in. She said yes, that was good news. And she did forgive me right away. She said, I said to her, you know, I didn't mean to be so irritable, but I was just afraid I wasn't going to get my assignment done. And she said, oh, I know that. So she'd pretty much forgiven me. And then I said, but I really mean it. I said there was really no point in that. And it led to a great discussion. My sister and I started talking about all the times where we had fought, things we'd fought over. It was a great, great night. And we ended up staying up pretty late talking about these very deep subjects, matters of forgiveness, all of these kinds of things. So I went back to bed, and I didn't want to know what time it was, but as I remember that night, we were sitting on her bed, and my parents had already gone to sleep, and there were just pools of light from the one little light by her bed. It was just the two of us, and all the darkness surrounding us. And there is just a special bonding that comes from that kind of heart-to-heart talk. And you guys will have to tell me how you do it. I mean, girls sit and talk at night about these things. So I wanted to share that because even though I was only 17, I went to sleep with this great sense that something very special had happened. We had both of us, taken an event which could have ended in a very uncomfortable and unnecessary tension and had turned it into one of my favorite memories. It is truly a wonderful memory. So I invite you to remember those wonderful moments of forgiveness and also to create more, if there are some that need to be created, and to go into it with the spirit of your father, because I believe my sister and I learned something very important that night. We loved each other, which is father-like. And I didn't have to ask for her forgiveness to continue to receive her love. I knew she would always love me. But I think we learned about the unfolding deity that night. I think we learned about the ministry and mercy of the Son and the grace and the wisdom of the Infinite Spirit. And that is what I would wish for you in our Urantia family as we continue on this wonderful path in this wonderful day. This brought to mind a wonderful song. We cannot sing it for you, but we can at least hear the lyrics, by Jeffrey Wattles. You know Dr. Jeffrey Wattles? I remember this song from 20 years ago, and I finally wrote Jeff, and I said, I need those words. And you can do the chorus. We can chant. That's an Indian red man thing to do as well. Sorry if I stepped on toes there. But it comes from my growing up in Kansas and enjoying Oklahoma as well. So it's Praise to the Universal Father. And here's the chorus. And then I'll read Jeff's lyrics, and then you can say the chorus with me. Ready? Here we go. Praise to the Universal Father. You can praise to the Universal Father. Praise to Thee, Eternal Son. Praise to Thee, Eternal Son. Praise to the Infinite Spirit. Unfolding Deity is one. Unfolding Deity is one. How can I know the Father dwells in me? How can I know Jesus cares for my soul? Deep in my heart, faith burning bright affirms, and paradise is my own goal. Praise to the Universal Father. Praise to Thee, Eternal Son. Praise to the Infinite Spirit. Unfolding Deity is one. How can I know one whom I cannot see? Not in biology, physics, or chemistry. Science finds the handiwork, does not find the spirit of the Creator, Controller, Upholder, loving and free. Praise to the Universal Father, praise to the Eternal Son, praise to the Infinite Spirit, unfolding Deity is one. Philosophy cannot show that the First Cause can hear your prayer. Rule books cannot help you be loving as well as fair. But when a child is hungry, thirsts for God in the midst of strife, he finds Jesus in mercy, the bread and the water of life. Praise to the Universal Father, praise to the Eternal Son, praise to the Infinite Spirit, unfolding Deity is one. And finally, our Divine Counselor, who told our wonderful story of the Paradise Family, the Paradise Trinity, ends one of his papers this way. God the Father loves men. God the Son serves men. God the Spirit inspires the children of the universe to the ever-ascending adventure of finding God the Father by the ways ordained by God the Son's through the ministry of the grace of God the Spirit. Page 53. Thank you very much.